to the monk who wrote the second poem? You said there was no mirror.
Well, what happened was he got angry and he went in search of the guy that had the Roman bowl, the sixth patriarch, and was going to like take the Roman bowl by force, I believe. Then when he encountered the sixth patriarch, Huineng set the Roman bowl on a stone or on the ground someplace and said, well, if you want the Roman bowl, there they are, take them. And apparently he tried to lift them, hagiography once again, and they were too heavy, he couldn't lift them off the stone, kind of like, you know, like Excalibur in the stone. He couldn't actually take the Roman bowl off the stone or off the ground. And then the sixth patriarch said, do you want the Roman bowl or do you want the teaching? And now the head monk was humble enough to say, well, actually, I want the teaching, and became a disciple of the sixth patriarch. Mm-hmm. And then the sixth patriarch could come out of hiding and start establishing his school, something like that. That's how the story goes. Mm-hmm. So it's daunting, it's scary to see those tires, those rusty cans. It takes a certain kind of courage. But I think what helps, and the thing I wanted to touch upon, if there's time tonight, is a practice called Tonglen. It's actually from the Tibetan tradition. And it is a formal practice, but I wanted to, and I may get describe a formal practice to you, I may not, depending on how it goes, but what I wanted to talk about is how Pema Chodron talks about Tonglen on the spot. When things arise, you perceive outside of yourself some painful situation that a friend or just some passerby is going through, or more efficaciously even, when something arises within yourself, irritation, resentment, impatience, anger, grief, shame. These various mental states that are afflictive, that are suffering. You know, the things that we would rather not feel. How to move towards them. How to actually find a Dharma gate to surmount the resistance to actually come closer to them. And the first step that Pema recommends is to recognize other people feel this way too. Other people have felt and are now feeling and will continue to feel in the future this irritation, this impatience, this shame. You know, when we're really suffering, woe is me, nobody knows what I'm going through. You know, we feel isolated and alone. Nobody could possibly understand how much shit I'm going through right now. You know, but that's probably not true. You know, as long as we're still alive, there's probably folks that have suffered more than us and have decided not to live any longer, as we know. So we're probably not alone, no matter how bad things get. We're sharing humanity. So to remember that, other, you know, thousands of people have felt this impatience on the freeway. Just yesterday, I was trying to get to a meeting in the city at 5 p.m., and yesterday was Fleet Week. And so I had a lot of opportunity to feel impatience. It took, you know, what normally should have taken me 45 minutes, it took an hour and a half. I was, you know, a half hour late to where I was trying to get. And, you know, I could feel myself wanting to push through the traffic and realizing I couldn't, and just being there and just kind of like vacillating between, you know, wanting to push through and realizing that I couldn't, you know. And so in those moments where we're stuck, if we could recognize that we have that in common with a lot of people, then this tendency to feel disconnected with because of our suffering can be alleviated to some extent. Other people feel this too. Now the next step in on-the-spot Tonglen is to use this as an opportunity to open, just to say, just to acknowledge and remember that other people can, you know, feel this kind of feeling too, that I'm not alone in feeling grief, despair, shame, lust, desire. Just to do that is already an opening of sorts, a significant opening. You're not shut down in woe is me, I'm all alone in this cruel, heartless world. You know, you're sharing something very deep and profound when you recognize that what you're sharing is basic humanity. Then the next step is to say, may I feel this so that others don't have to. May everyone's impatience be felt by me now. This is a mind training technique. And this is the heart of Tonglen, is to take suffering and give happiness. So, and in the formal meditation, you know, you sit and you breathe and you connect to the breath, this idea of taking and giving, taking and giving. With the inhalation, you visualize taking others' suffering in the form of a dark, black, stinky, toxic, yucky, tar-like substance. You breathe it into your heart. Or they say your center of self-cherishing through visualization. You imagine it coming and eating up that tight knot of self-cherishing in the traditional Tibetan way of describing it. On the exhalation, you breathe out all of your happiness, all of your good karma, all of the things in life that have given you and are giving you joy, and you give that. You can give that to specific individuals whom you know are going through a hard time. You can give that, you know, in a more general sense to the community, the nation, the globe, the universe. But through this visualization, you train your mind in the idea of opening the heart, of compassion. But what Pema Chodron emphasizes, and I think is, I feel from my own experience, is most powerful is when you're suffering yourself, when spontaneously some kind of klesha, some kind of mental affliction arises, if you can use that experience as the meditation on Tonglen. I'm feeling really pissed off right now. May I feel it so other people don't have to feel it. It's a mental training to get yourself close to the actual pain of it. You drop the story, you drop the idea, you feel the dukkha directly, without justification, without hiding. You open up to the suffering, your own suffering, with the notion of it being an opening, of opening your heart. And the tail, or the formal structure around it, is kind of like a visualization or a narrative to give you a dharma gate, an access, some sort of confidence that it's safe and actually beneficial to try to open up to your own suffering and be with it.
I think you used the word radical in one of the talks. We said Zazen is radical.
Mm-hmm.
What's so interesting is that practice, which is so wonderful, is so opposite of what we usually want to do.
Yeah.
We want to breathe out the garbage.
Yes.
We want to breathe in the happiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And we're hardwired that way.
Yeah, we are. It's called the eight worldly dharmas. Yeah. It's like fame and...
Praise and blame,
success
and
failure, gain and loss. And we always want to go for the pleasure and avoid the pain. We always want to go for the gain and avoid the loss. But life does not accommodate us in our desires. You know, we end up on this treadmill of pursuing a carrot that we can never quite get because, you know, life keeps on giving us unexpected pains. And we can never settle. As long as we are under the throes of the eight worldly dharmas, we can never take our seat. We can never inhabit our actual life. And so finding some way to go against the tendency is love. Tonight as I was coming over, I was remembering something that Mel Weitzman said to us going into a sesshin in 1994, talking about how to make it through a sesshin. You know, as many of you, or maybe all of you know, a sesshin is a long, like, 7-day meditation retreat. And he said, you know, you could experience, you know, a lot of discomfort probably, your knees will hurt, your mind might hurt. The only way to actually find any, something to this effect, he said, the only way to find actually any relief is to go against the tendency. When the knee starts to hurt, the tendency is to want to get away from it, to want to turn away from it. But if you can go against that tendency and turn towards the sensation and find a way to be with the sensation, then there might be some composure there. But the thing that this daunting work that I'm speaking of love, of being able to turn towards suffering, it's the only antidote I know of to fear. And I think fear drives, is the root of a lot of our suffering, a lot of our grief. And fear is what makes it difficult to sit and look into that lake and see what's on the bottom of it. But until we do, until we actually look, until we sit into the center of our life, sit through it all, sit through all of the griefs, all of the wounds, all of the betrayals, all of the disappointments, we'll be running away from ourselves. But once we have sat through every part of our life, once we have polished the mirror to such an extent that we can see ourselves to the very bottom, then we have a chance to inhabit our life without fear. I've heard it said that and there are basically two emotions, love and fear. And whatever specific affect you're experiencing can fall under one of those two categories: rage, impatience, resentment, envy, despair, all of the so-called negative affective states are manifestations of some kind of fear. What would it be like? What would it be like to be able to live fearlessly, to inhabit your life fearlessly, and just open to it? I think I've said here once before that I quoted a poem of William Blake's, I think, where he said, we are caught on this earth a little space to learn to bear the beams of love. And that's our task. And fear, I propose, is the primary dust on the mirror. That's the primary thing that obscures our vision, the primary thing that keeps us from being able to love, is this fear. We're afraid of love, is what Blake is saying. We have to learn how to bear love, because love is like light. It shows those tires. We cannot love ourselves unless we can see our tires. How can we see our tires? The Apostle John, in his epistle, said, perfect love casts out fear. If we can learn to love ourselves, all the disparate parts of ourselves, then we will be a blessing. Eyes of compassion, looking upon sentient beings, assembles an ocean of blessing beyond measure. If we have that fearlessness to see throughout the body, to see each and every little thing with unconditional positive regard, our own shit and the shit around us, we can gaze at it steadily, calmly, will be a blessing.